Welcome to Teachers in the Tiny Chairs, a podcast about all things early childhood teaching. Launched in 2020, Teachers in the Tiny Chairs began as a resource for teachers beginning the 2020-21 school year in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic and all of the uncertainty that brought for early childhood classrooms. I'm Dr. Christine Lippard, and each episode I interview researchers, classroom teachers, and other early childhood practitioners about a specific early childhood education topic. Intended to provide research background, practical ideas, and cheering on from a distance, Teachers in the Tiny Chairs is the long-distance mentoring your teacher prep faculty wish they could provide. In this episode, I talked to two early career teachers about how their year is going. If the goal of the podcast was to support teachers who were early in their career when the COVID-19 pandemic changed how we do everything about education, then it made sense to go back and talk to some of those teachers and see how things were going. I had intended to add all sorts of facts and figures about how teachers are doing and teacher attrition this year and those sorts of things, and honestly, I expected to get a pretty bleak picture. And, as often happens, the interview didn't go anywhere I expected. These teachers tell stories of excitement and resilience and digging in with their kiddos and their co-teachers. So I think you'll be encouraged to hear from Haley and Ashley about how their 2020-21 school year is going.
I'm Haley and I'm a preschool teacher.
I'm Ashley and I am a preschool teacher in an integrated classroom.
Great. So you're both a little over a year into this. How would you say this school year is going?
With nothing to base it on, I'd say it's been a pretty good school year. Like, with everything that's been thrown at us and all the changes happening, like, but then looking at what our kids have accomplished in the time we've had with them, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, with what Haley said, I feel like being a new teacher has put us in like a great position because we don't know what life is like normally being a teacher. Like, our year was cut short last year. We've had the pandemic this year. So honestly, I think it's been great for us because I haven't really struggled too much with flexibility because it just seems normal. I think it'll be interesting next year to compare it to a normal year. But right now, I think it's been a pretty good year. Our students are still making growth, and it's been cool to see, especially in our district, how they've been flexible shuffling between virtual and in-person so much.
That's awesome. You guys have a really positive outlook. And maybe you're right that there are some advantages. I feel I'm having to make lots of adjustments to the class I teach because there's not an in-person practicum component. And sometimes I think it's harder trying to keep track in my head of what is good pedagogy in this context and what am I trying to just force, you know, to translate. What has surprised you about this year?
I think as teachers, we're supposed to be flexible, and it's been kind of surprising seeing how many teachers are hesitant or pushing back against being flexible. And I think it's really challenged a lot of teachers, which was surprising to me. I've always had such a positive outlook on teachers are so flexible, can do anything. And I think this year has been really challenging, but it has showed me at least that it's okay to have challenges, and it's okay. And it showed like not everyone has everything together all the time. And I've also been really surprised with our students and just their resiliency. It doesn't seem to be impacting them as much as I thought it originally would. So I think that's great too.
I think it's interesting. So we use creative curriculum, and in my district previously, you just got to teach whatever unit you wanted to teach when you wanted to teach it. And K-12, they decided that teachers needed to be teaching the same thing, meaning the same standards at the exact same time, as opposed to throughout the year. They decided that for continuity between kids who are online and hybrid and if teachers are gone and all that. So overall, that makes sense, but it's really hard to implement when people aren't buying in and they're like, I always teach this in the fall. Well, now you have to teach it in the spring, and then they're upset about how they have to teach it because it's not the way that they're doing it. I would agree with Ashley, the flexibility that you think you have changes. Even for us, like some things I'm like, oh, I do this the same way. And I've realized that after a year. But And then kids with masks. Everyone's like, when I talk to people about my job, they're like, how do you keep the kids wearing their masks? They just do it. They don't care. They really don't. And I think that's one of the funniest things. They wear them better than adults do.
Yeah, I think even the first couple episodes of the podcast, I think I asked people like, so masks, how's that going to go? And I think we did all sort of expect it to be a disaster. And it seems like the kids have been really adaptable. I mean, I know of even 2-year-old classrooms where the kids wear them other than when they're eating or rest time, you know? So I also was surprised by that, Haley. I'm going to be honest. I'm surprised with how positive you two are feeling about the year, because I think I and other ed prep faculty were panicked of like, oh shoot, this is not only is this not, we didn't teach you or prepare you for this because we couldn't foresee it. We taught you not to do a lot of what you're having to do to make it work. And so, so great. Way to rally, guys. I do think it's really helpful when teachers have had development and have a development background. So when you're trying to move between modes, you're not just trying to navigate pedagogies, but you can draw on that a little bit. What has been the most helpful to you as a new teacher?
Just in general, I would say like finding the people that I can ask questions to. Who will help me figure it out and not be like, why don't you know that? Because we don't know what we don't know. And a lot of it is district specific, or it's specific to how your boss wants things done. And you don't know that, and they don't come out right and say it, but you're just supposed to know it. And then you're like, well, no one told me. I experienced that a whole lot last spring, because we jumped in January, and then I was there for 2 months, and then spring break happened and we never went back. So like in those 2 months, I was just flying by the seat of my pants, and they're like, didn't you know that you had to do this? And I was like, no, no one told me. And they're like, oh, great. So just finding those people that I can talk to. And I'm very sad because one of my people is retiring this year. Why are you doing this to me?
Yeah.
Going off of what Haley said, I think like finding those people to talk to, and I've had a very supportive like building in general. So there's a lot of new teachers in our building. My co-teacher is new. My administrator is new in her role, and she's so supportive. So we were kind of told to go with the philosophy of try it out and then ask for forgiveness if it's something you're not supposed to do. And I think that's been great because it's been able to give both my co-teacher and I confidence to do what we know how to do. I think a lot of times new teachers are scared to do anything because there may be lack of confidence, lack of, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? And I think this year with the motto of just try it out and see what works and what doesn't, and then pushing against the norm has been super helpful. And then having like that support. So like, obviously Haley, I talk to her probably every day and calling about questions, like, how would you handle this situation? And then talking with people in my building just about how our classroom is going, to feel like I'm not alone, because I think this year, especially, a lot of people are feeling like first year teachers.
Yeah. I do think there are some good things about us having to rethink everything we've ever done, or like you're saying, like the freedom to try it. And if it fails, like that's okay, because we're just trying new things. A couple of weeks ago, I emailed one of our current student teachers and who was with me when we last spring, and just said, I'm thinking about you guys. I hope it's going well. I know that college didn't end how you expected. And she was like, oh my gosh, it was so good to hear from you today, because I'm trying something new and it's new for this classroom and it's either going to go beautifully or be a disaster. And I said, hey, I feel the same way about class today. I'm trying something new and it's either going to be a total failure or it's going to work great. So I do think you're right. A lot of us feel like first year teachers. Are there places where your skills have been particularly helpful in navigating the pandemic? Or teaching during the pandemic?
Technology. Because I got the tech minor in college, and everyone just comes to me. They're like, how do you do this? Or have you found a fun way to do this when we were virtual? They were like, what ideas do you have? And I was like, well, I don't know how to do it, but give me like 10 minutes. Let me figure out how to do it and I'll get back to you. And then I taught everyone in the building how to use a specific technology that they were then able to use with the kids. And that felt really good because then it kind of flipped the, you're a first year teacher. You don't know as much. You don't have as much experience, but hey, this is something you're really, really good at and we need your help. So that boosted my confidence a little bit.
Yes. Getting the technology minor, I think definitely helped this year. Being able to have a say in how we're going to teach online in our building was super helpful for me. I didn't feel as lost or confused. And I think my experiences in undergrad as well kind of helped to prepare me because we were always given situations that were out of the norm or told to think out of the box or maybe do things that aren't necessarily the traditional way and looking more at like what a student needs versus what has always been done. So this year has been an awesome year to be able to try some of that and adjust, like take what we've learned in undergrad and actually apply it without fear of being pushed back against.
So it sounds like some good things have come out of trying to do education in a new and different way. Have your building started to talk about what next year looks like? Or, you know, what is sort of the vibe about that of, are some of these things going to stick? Are people ready to, you know, get back to normal? What is that? What are those conversations looking like?
Ours kind of depends on the direction that our district is going, which anyone that's keeping up with news in my district would kind of see with that. We might be doing a half in-person, half virtual type of thing like we've been doing this year. But I think for preschool, especially, they're trying to encourage all students back in the building all 5 days a week. I think masks will probably still be required. We're all vaccinated in my building, but I don't know. It'll be interesting. I think they're trying to make it as normal as possible going forward, especially under what our governor has been suggesting too.
Which I will not ask you to comment on, but I may take liberties to comment on. Do you get the sense though that this freedom to just sort of try new things and innovate is going to carry forward?
I think in my building and in my department, it will. I'm talking with some other teachers. I'm not sure if they all feel the same way, but my boss has told us time and time again, push back against the norm, try different things and never stop doing that. So my co-teacher and I have already figured out some plans for next year where we're kind of dropping a curriculum that's being used throughout the rest of the department because we don't agree with it. And so I think for us that in, like, it's going to be against the norm, but I think that's how we started and that's kind of what they expect from us now. So I think that'll continue.
You two are sort of like wild kids down the hall that, like, as long as you don't get too loud, they'll just let you do what you do.
And our district, I know our district has decided that preschool will be coming back fully. There will not be an online option for our preschool next year, but that's as much as I know. I don't know if we're going to go back to teaching our own units at our own time or if we're going to have to keep sticking with what we're doing. I think that's going to be a lot of end of the year discussions that we have once kids are gone.
And there's such a weird tension right now. I mean, I feel it too, of like wanting to plan for next year. One, because we're getting late in the school year, so we're ready to just be like, all right, call it on that one. Let's see what's next. And to think outside the pandemic, but then there's also like still these very real needs right now. And for sure there's people that are, you know, and kids that are just super burnt out right now. So I think that I'm not surprised that one of you is like, yeah, we start talking about next year. And the other's like, nope, we're not even, like, we just got to deal with right now. Well, other than COVID, this year has been really full of other challenges for our society. So including race-related turmoil. And I'll just acknowledge for context for readers that I think I had emailed you that prior to hearing about the 6 Asian women who were slain last night. And so I know that that's a very like current topic, so don't feel pressure to talk about it. Or if it came up in school today, you can, you know, wherever you're at is fine. As well as a contentious election and natural disasters. Do you see those things coming up in your preschool classroom? And sort of how are children navigating all that?
This is my soapbox with all of that. So my co-teacher and I both were from Iowa State and both had decided to take an approach of like, children are very aware, so we need to be educating them and feeding into it in an appropriate way. So we went like for the election time, for example, our students were asking us questions. We had students with parents with varying political beliefs that would tell us what their parents believed and what they believed. So then we started a whole unit on like voting, and we talked about like voting in our classroom, what the voting system kind of looks like at a level that's appropriate for preschool. And we've decided to kind of continue that. So instead of our traditional social emotional curriculum that we don't agree with, we've decided to take an approach where we address social justice topics every month. So we started out with the basic one, like skin color, race, because that's like somewhat of an easy one to kind of address. There's a lot of resources there. And we spent a lot of time discussing, my skin color is different than your skin color. And is that okay? Why is that okay? And we have great conversations. Our kids will come up to random people that come in our room and will say, look, my skin color is different than yours, and that's okay. So it's been awesome to see. Now we've been getting more into like ability versus disability. And then family structures is our next one. So we're reading books about like gender identity, different parents, ways that children have like families, like some babies come from airports is a book we read in our classroom. And we talk about why it's okay to be adopted. I think we really do a disservice to kids if we don't dive in and help educate them. And I think there's appropriate ways and not so appropriate ways to do it. But we talked about how we don't want to just do it on certain days or when certain events come up, but make it a continuous conversation. So for example, it was a great thought, but for Martin Luther King Day, my building had decided all of the kids in the building would color a picture of themselves with a skin color that matches them. And we would hang it up, call it good. And my co-teacher and I did not participate in that activity because we felt like it didn't make sense to just do it for one day when it should be a continuous conversation to be teaching students about. So I think it's very important that even though it's hard and there's not resources, you can't go on Pinterest to find great resources for teaching difficult topics like that. But I think it's really important for educators in this time to be doing that.
I don't have to use this if you don't want me to, but how has that been received by others in your building?
You can use it. It makes people uncomfortable. I think one of my cooperating teacher that I student taught with is now one of my leadership team people. And I brought up some of my concerns just to her, and she agreed with me, where some other people say they're little, they don't need to know about that. They see it on the news. They hear the parents talking about it. Some of our kids have direct like interactions with that. I don't have very many white students in my classroom. So why aren't we addressing those things? And why are we only teaching things that make us comfortable? It's taken a lot of work. And sometimes it's like my co-teacher and I will look at each other like, what did we get into? But we've never had a parent come at us for it. We've never had anyone complain about it. It just makes people uncomfortable, I think, because they're not ready to do it in their own rooms.
Not that we get to own any of it, but just so proud of you guys for jumping in. And it's fun to know like the beauty of our alum working together, because you can support each other. Whereas when you're off on your own, that's a different experience. And it looks like Haley has things to say.
Yeah, I feel like I dropped the ball on teaching about this stuff, but I don't have the support from either the people in my room or in my district who like at our level that are like, yes, we need to teach this. Here's how, like, let's try and figure out a way to do this together. And I don't even have the support from that in my room. And I'm scared to do it and be the one who's always like, doing something different because, but yeah, that's something I want to do more, and I just need to do it because I know that it's important.
I mean, I think that's totally understandable. And I think, I mean, I'm even finding myself this year having moments. What happened in class the other day? Oh, we were talking about behavior guidance. And I said something about, well, and how behavior or emotion, expressing emotions, something like that. And I said, well, and there's a lot of cultural pieces to that. And I was walking to my car after, and I was like, hey, what does that mean? Like, what do I mean when I say there's a lot of cultural pieces to that? And B, what part of young children or caring for young children or teaching doesn't have a lot of cultural pieces to it? So I emailed the students that come on that day after. You guys know my after class walk to the car is when I do my reflecting. And I emailed and I said, hey, I want to commit to you to stop doing that. And that when I do it, let's stop and talk about what that actually means, because culture is woven through all of, you know, education and young children. And so to just be like, I would be doing that every day. Like, oh, well, how we feed children and what we feed children. There's a lot of cultural abuses. So like, no, it's in all of it. Yeah. I think tackling hard topics with children is important. And it doesn't, I get what you're saying. I mean, I see where you're both coming from, and I don't think there's a right answer for how to get there. I do think books is one that, I've heard from other teachers that are like, oh, we can't read Last Stop on Market Street. And I'm like, what about that book? Can you not read? Like, we read that as a bedtime story. Like, that people, they don't know that there's a soup kitchen. Like, I feel like we should take a field trip to the soup kitchen, you know, things like that. And so,
we had a whole conversation about, truck stops, because we had a unit on, what was our unit technically on? Roads and construction. And I had a bunch of transportation books, so I put those out too. And I had a kid pick a book off the shelf to read, and it was one about a truck stop. And they were like, what is that? Like, why are they all there? And I was like, huh, I wouldn't have thought that they didn't know what a truck stop was, because I feel like that's just something we know about. And it's just even those little things that are important to talk about too. So I was like, I did not realize that I would have to find a way to explain what a truck stop was to 4-year-olds. I thought they would know what it was.
So you guys know that I talk about open-ended versus closed-ended art. And I show a picture of where like a little kid's feet have been stamped in yellow and then printed as a corn stalk. And the teacher's done all the cutting out of the stalk. And so I always ask, like, what did the child learn from this? And we always talk about, well, maybe they got a sensory experience. And today, this just happened hours ago, somebody said, I mean, they learned what corn looked like. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, there are probably kids that don't know that corn grows on a stalk. Like, there probably are children who are like, I don't know where corn cob comes from. Is it on a tree? Is it on a bush? Is it on the ground? I don't know. And that was like, I had never had that thought before.
We had a student who thought hamburgers came from McDonald's, or beef cows were at McDonald's and that's where you got it. And I mean, yeah, that makes total sense. And we've been doing some equity work department wide, that a point was brought up that we need to be teaching to the culture of all of our students. So instead of the traditional A is for alligator, that means nothing to a kid who doesn't know what an alligator is. So thinking about, okay, what around our community or what in our students' lives do they know that starts with an A, and how can we teach that? And I think that ties into the difficult conversations and pushing past what we're used to teaching. And then thinking about, like, how can we tie their own experiences and provide those direct reflections of students into our teaching? Because for my student, yeah, beef hamburgers, they do come from McDonald's. You've probably never seen a cow in real life. And I think that's okay too.
That's a great point too, Ashley. And I try to be mindful of this with toddlers, is like when you start having those conversations and they just sort of become part of your natural everyday, then when something else comes up, like a child spontaneously says, you know, your skin's different than mine, or, you know, or comments on hair or any of the visible things, or why is that person in a wheelchair? You know, any of those, that because you're just used to talking about and explaining everything, then you explain that too. Okay, so as you think back, not so long ago, to when you were in school and your own teacher prep and your experiences now, What would you tell current undergrads?
I would say like the things that we learn are important. And sometimes some of the things I was like, I'm going to be a first grade teacher. I'm never going to use this. And now I use it every day. So thinking about like every single day, any project you're given, any work you're reading, how can I apply this to make myself a better teacher when I become one?
I don't know if this applies to education majors because most of the ones I know did their readings, but do your readings and keep your notes. I go back. I still have all my stuff, whether it's digital or I kept paper copies. I go back. I'm like, I remember what class this was in. I don't remember exactly what I'm looking for, but I know where I can find it. And I use it. Like, taking those notes and reading that stuff is really beneficial. And it's not busy work, I promise.
I might just have to play that for my class. Especially, and I'm very aware of teaching the infant toddler class in a birth through third program and where most of the students go on to teach. So I try to make it relevant, but I still think there's a sense of like, really? And I'm like, yeah, because you're going to work with other kids that you can't communicate with verbally.
I was going to say, I think every class kind of applies no matter where you're going to teach birth through third. I use a lot of what I learned in the infant toddler class, even with my kids, whether it's their ability level, communication, things like that. And the other thing I was going to say is make friends or at least professional colleagues in your cohort that you can talk to. We have like a group of four of us that still talk all the time, whether one-on-one or in a whole group trying to figure out things and brainstorming. And I think it's really important to develop those relationships while you're in college so that you have people to go to that know what you're going through and have gone through the same education as you. So they probably have a similar thought process as well.
Because those, I'm bouncing off of Ashley, but they might not be in the same situation that you're in. Like Ashley and I teach the same grade level, but it's completely different. What we're doing and how we're doing it and the guidance we're given is completely different, even though we have this essentially the same job. So I think that's interesting too, because the advice you can get from coworkers is different than the advice you can get from another professional in a different location. And that's really important.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Even like I've had great mentors in my department at Iowa State, but I have really great mentors that are outside of my department also, and they just see the world in a slightly different way, which is helpful. And then outside of our university, I think as faculty, our wish is always that we had more time to follow up with students once they were out, to support, to cheer on, to collect data on, like to know how you're doing and what's working. And we just don't. And so are there things that you would, what are the things that you would say to faculty?
This is kind of hard to teach, but how to form relationships with other adults in your room and how to work cohesively with them. And that's something you might have the opportunity to do during student teaching. It depends on the classroom you're in. You might be given full control, you might not. And then if you get thrown into a situation where you are, I don't want to say in charge, but basically in charge of other adults and giving them tasks. It's very, very difficult when you come in as a 23-year-old and they all could be a parent to you. Like that's just a hard thing. And I think it can't really be taught, but I think it's an important discussion that could happen and just be like, hey, this might want to be on your radar. I don't have any solutions, but I'm still working on that.
And I do think we focus so much on preparing student or pre-service teachers to work with children. And then, I mean, most people came into the career because they wanted to work with children and they were pretty good at working with children. And then you end up working with other adults who are colleagues or peers or paraprofessionals in your room or a supervisor who either doesn't understand early childhood or has a different take on it than you, or families, and that's where I think where a lot of challenges come up.
I asked Haley and Ashley what they would want teacher prep faculty to know, and they talked about being available for ongoing support.
We've reached out to multiple faculty and still have relationships where we can say, hey, this is going on, or hey, I'm just having a stressful point in my life. Can you meet with me and talk me through it? I think it's really important, especially as we go into the profession, having those people that we know we can fall back on, because we spend 4 years with that faculty. And especially in our department, I felt like it was the same, like 4 or 5 people you saw pretty frequently. So just like students that are going off to be teachers, knowing that it's okay, and faculty making it clear, like, I am here for you. I'm willing to still help you, even though you're not necessarily a student anymore.
And that's not something I'm just saying, like, actually take me up on it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good nudge for me. I had earlier in the semester reached out to the student teachers who were with me when the pandemic hit, but then the other like 2/3 of them actually that are currently student teaching, I didn't get around to emailing just to say, hey, how's it going? So I will do that. As beginning teachers or early in your career, or in general, what do you wish families knew?
I think for my families, just we love your kids. I care about your kids. Their kids' best interest is, you know, where I have everything. I plan everything for your kids. I think I work with a lot of families with children with high needs. And usually I'm the first school setting the kids have been in, first peer interactions, anything like that. I wish families would know, like, I am prepared and I do love your kid. And I'm not just saying that. And I think this year has given me an opportunity to be able to show that more with being virtual and with families being more involved. But I think it's important, like, we are new teachers, but we still like have the education. We still have the ability and we still care about your student.
And I don't know if this is because they got to see us teaching virtually, but I really haven't had any parents who were like, oh, you're a first year teacher. Like they're like, she's the professional. How can, like, I had to make a referral for a kid about speech. And the mom was like, thank you. Like, I knew something was up, but I didn't know how to do it. Thank you for bringing it up. And if you think it's the right time, let's do it. And they're like, they just trust me fully. And I'm not hiding the fact that I'm a first year teacher. I think it was in my big meet the teacher letter that we sent out.
Well, and I think that's a credit to you that they trust you regardless of you're a first year teacher or a, you know, I think, yeah, I think for them to trust you and feel comfortable with their kids being with you is an indicator that they see that you're competent and they see the relationships that you're, that you have with their kids.
And Haley, as you were saying too, like with that mom that was like, yes, let's do this together, let's figure it out. I think it's important for parents to realize they're just as important in the classroom as teachers are or as their kids are. Like their input is important, what they do at home is important, what they think should be happening at school is important to me, it's important to teachers. So families realizing like that team approach is okay. And to push those boundaries and make sure that your voice is heard with teachers, because I think nowadays most teachers are open to having that like team approach with families.
I frequently encourage families who are like, oh, I don't know if the teacher, I don't shouldn't email all the time, or I don't know if this, or I didn't get a response. I'm like, I just want you to go ahead and assume that if you didn't get a response, it was not like it was nothing negative. The teacher's not mad at you. The teacher doesn't think you're wrong. Like, honestly, she probably got 47 emails today and the front page is only 25 and it just fell off, you know, like reach out again. And, you know, remember that teachers are holding 20 or 30 like little people's needs in their brains. And so sometimes they forget things, it happens. Or, you know, if your child gets skipped over for a certain job or a certain thing, like let the teacher know they didn't do it on purpose. I'm sure of it. And so, yeah, I hear where you guys are coming from. Anything else that you would share about the first year teaching experience or the first year teaching during COVID experience?
Your classroom, once you have one, does not have to be picture perfect. You need
Amen. To-
I was working too much. And then I was like, you know what? No, I'm done. And I think I've texted Ashley a few times, like I'm putting my stuff down for the night. And she's like, go you. And I've done it to her too. Like that's so important because I would have just kept doing it to make sure my rooms looked like all the other rooms of these teachers who have been teaching for 10, 12 years. And that's not reasonable. And I can't hold those expectations for myself. And no one else is holding those expectations for you. You're not supposed to say take time for you. But as someone who uses that and is like, no, I haven't done anything for me today, do it. Because otherwise it won't be good.
And that's what I was going to say. If you put so much effort, I mean, I catch myself doing this with my family too. Like if you put so much effort into making your room cute that you're exhausted when you turn around and have to spend time with the children, it will show up and they will remember long from now how they felt and how they felt other people, how they felt their teacher felt about them far more than they'll remember the decorations in the classroom.
Yeah. Like Haley said, Hannah and I, that's my co-teacher. Hi, Hannah. She listens. We have rearranged our classroom probably, I think we did it again yesterday. It's our eighth time this year. And we kind of decided a rule at the beginning of the year that we're either going to come early or we're going to stay late, but we're not going to do both. Because especially in the pandemic, taking care of yourself and your family and your needs really comes above your job. So I'd say for a first year teacher, because it's easy to slip into, and then especially in the pandemic, decide where your boundary is going to be and stick with it. Meet your deadlines, obviously, but manage your time in a way that you can have those boundaries so that you're not at school for 12, 13 hours a day. Because that's where we kind of started heading and we realized that was not a great place to be. So taking time for yourself and just managing those priorities.
Yeah, that's so great. It's so great that you guys have figured it out so early in your career, because so many people don't figure it out and burn out or it takes so long. But even Ashley, as you're saying, like 12 or 13 hours, and all I'm thinking is, you know, we can say, well, then you'll be tired the next day and you'll be grouchy with your kids. And people are like, well, you just need to have a good attitude. But like your brain needs time to rest and recover so that you can be creative and problem solve and make quick decisions in the moment. And teachers make thousands of decisions a day. So we kind of often flippantly say like, it makes you a better teacher, but the reality is like, no, actually it makes you a better teacher. I think that you all are one, getting messages from leadership, which is awesome. And two, reminding each other of just like that this is your first year. You're not 10 years into this, you're not 20 years into this, and the way you teach then will be different. You're doing really great for now. That is not what I meant to say. You're doing really great. You're sharing things that make me really excited about your classrooms. And I think recognizing like it's an ongoing process and it is a marathon, not a sprint. Yeah, I'm really glad that you are coming off the year, or not coming off the year, but you're at this point in the year and feeling good about how things are going.
Like I was thinking back, I was talking with one of the paraprofessionals in my room. We were like, how long were we online? When were we online? That seems like 2 years ago when it was 2 months ago. And it's just so crazy how much has happened in this school year and then in this calendar year. So much has happened. A year ago, we were like, everything is shut down. What are we doing? Like I saw on my Facebook memories that I made a post like, hey, if you're working with your kids from home during this time, like, please reach out if you have questions. Let me know what support I can provide. I was like, that was a year ago.
And I did. I sent at least two or three people to you. It was like, this person's child receives. And I think what was really hard for a lot of families was, one of the things I think will come out of this is that families really have seen the impact school has, and the news likes to make it about childcare, and that's not what I'm hearing from parents. But you know, especially families whose kids are receiving some sort of support services. So either they have an IEP, or they don't, but there's some other sort of support service or counseling or whatever, and saying like, the people who work with our kids are like, they're magic, you know? And so I hope that renewed appreciation will continue. Awesome. Well, unless you want to add anything else, I will just say thank you so much for your time.
Haley and Ashley, thank you so much for your time and for giving me part of your spring break to chat. Teachers, we are here for you. We care about you. We are cheering you on from afar. We know that many of you are in that chunk of the year between spring break and the end of the year, and you are going to make it. In the meantime, you have lots of opportunities for meaningful and fun interactions with the children in your classroom. And so we hope the best for you in the spring. I look forward to celebrating having this year in the books as we come up on summer. Podcast recorded and edited by Christine Lippard. Music by Jason Lippard. Thank you.